Well, there we are again after 1 year. Yeah, it's been a while for some reason. Maybe we come to this later, but today, after 1 year, we want to record another episode for our podcast Kantholz. And yeah, before I start with the topic, I want to introduce first of all my colleague Moritz. Today he's the moral rich, and I am LA,
Good to be
Laurin, LA, and we have some two very intriguing guests, and they are not just from somewhere. They are from China, and more precisely, they are from Beijing or Peking, studying at the Tsinghua University, where I have been actually in September. I will maybe say some words about this later. And they are both doing their PhD, very young, but very talented, and working in the, yeah, more in the climate economics area. So as you know about climate economics, and we want to talk about it, of course, and especially about the global players, because 1 year, no, actually it was, I guess it was 3 years ago, we had our first, one of our first episodes regarding China versus USA. And as you know, maybe there you could create the saying, after Trump is before Trump. So there will be another period of 4 years with Trump, at least 4 years, you never know. And it's interesting to have like this retrospective and now this the kind of forecast to the next years regarding climate, regarding economy, regarding energy, with these two players, China and USA, how they will shape the world. And that's why we have these two beautiful guests from China. And I would, before we start with the topics, I would love to have you introduce yourself a bit more specific because I couldn't say too much. But I know
Yeah,
Charlie. Yeah,
okay.
maybe you start.
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Charlie, and I cannot change my name here. So this is my Chinese name, Chen Fang, and my English name is Charlie. So I am a PhD, second year PhD student, majored in applied economics in School of Economics and Management at Tsinghua University. And last year, I earned my bachelor degree in environmental management and both the economics. So my research interest focused on the climate change economics and also global sustainable development. In this year, I'm just trying to find my dissertation question or select a specific question to further research. So a very preliminary interesting question motivates my research is about how to use the economics model or statistic tools to evaluate the welfare effects in the context of climate change or the green transition or just transition. So I think it's a very interesting question, and I want to do more and do more research and collect more data about this and to put this question in a global perspective. So thank you.
Thank you. And then maybe Bowen or Bo.
Yeah, Bowen.
Yeah,
Hi. My name is Bowen, and my Chinese name is Bowen Wang. So, you can call me Bowen. And I'm really similar to Cherry. Charlie.
Charlie, right?
Charlie,
Yeah.
sorry. My major is also the climate change economics, and I studied in the Institute of Energy Economics and Environment, or we also call it 3E in Tsinghua University, Beijing. And I'm also a second year PhD student, and now I'm also finding my research interest, and my specific topic for my PhD degree. And I think I'm really interested in the climate change loss and damage and adaptation since. And I have done a little bit research on the global impact of the extreme weather events, and I calculate the direct and indirect environmental impact on the economy globally and on different sectors and different countries. And this is some part of my work. And also, I'm really interested in the global climate governance and the climate negotiation. So I'm really interested in the global issue, like the Chinese, the European Union, the US role in the climate change governance. And it's my pleasure to be here and discuss with you guys. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's wonderful. Maybe I should say what you said. What was it? Wang Shao Hao? Wang Shang Hao?
Yeah, 晚上好。
Shang
Good
Hao.
evening.
Good evening. Yeah, good morning for us. Exactly.
Yes.
Because you just mentioned your specialization, I would start actually with the recently happening COP29 in Baku.
Yeah.
I guess you followed this event. It's 29. I mean, you can think about like you needed 29 COPs, and where are we standing now? Was this actually worth it? Because most of the time they're talking about Kyoto or Paris and nothing more. So from my perspective, it was more a failure. It was also kind of like more disastrous regarding the reputation to make a fossil country or fossil player the host. But I want to get your opinion, like also from the Chinese perspective, how did you recognize the COP29 in Baku, and do you think that was is it does it the COP anyway still have much influence for the global climate governance and issues, or is it more like it's happening more on a local level or like the national level?
Yeah, actually, I followed COP29, and I think some opinions or some voices say this COP is not a very successful conference. And I think there are some very interesting points we can discuss. The first, I think the most famous outcome of this COP, which is about the climate finance, and that is, I remember that. From the developing countries' perspective, they want $1.3 trillion every year, provided by the developed countries in a public source. But in the end, the developed countries only just put forward the $300 billion. So there is such a huge finance gap, and that's why many people just disappear. Felt disappointed about this outcome. So this is the first part. And I think the second part is about the fossil fuel, because in the last year, the COP28 in Dubai, and there is a very famous sentence in the statement, which is called the transition away from the fossil fuel. And but in this year's COP29 in Baku, the fossil fuel, the attention on fossil fuel is not so significant or obvious. So many scientists or many government officials are just worried about the global attitude about the fossil fuel transition. And I think another part maybe I heard about is the Paris Agreement, the Article 6. I think Article 6 is just, I think it's keeping in discussion in every COP. So I think in this year, there is some progress about the specific mechanism design of the global carbon market. But from the news letters and other media coverage, I have not a complete understanding of the specific design of the global carbon market, but I think there is a significant progress, and there is a consensus between among different nations to establish a global a carbon market. Actually, it is not a quick process, because according to my supervisor, she graduates from Harvard, and her supervisor, when she was a PhD, which is a very famous professor called Robert Stevens, and before Paris, before COP, before 2015, before Paris Agreement, that professor just put forward the policy recommendations to establish a global carbon market, and collected many evidence to support his opinion, but it takes too long. To today, until today, the global market formed, and I think it is of a big uncertainty in the future about the global carbon market. So I think this is three very interesting takeaways from the COP29 in Baku, and because I didn't go to Baku to COP29, and I think I remembered there are some our members in the Sino the camp mm-hmm. went there, and I think maybe Bowen knows something about that. I think Haoting, mm-hmm. right? Haoting Yang Haoting, yeah, went to Baku and attended that conference and to deeply immersed in the negotiation part. And I'm really interested about that. But I am not so familiar, because the very many very much details about the negotiation, I think it's really interesting but also challenging. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. And I know that Haoting is also a summer camp member. And
yes.
Maybe LA, you remember her. Yeah. And I can share some of my opinions about the COP29 in Baku. And I also didn't go here, but I have do some discussion with the negotiators just came to the COP29, and she is actually a national negotiator in China, and she participated in some real negotiation. So I think many opinions are really shocked me, and I think it's really interesting to share with you. And maybe I will talk about two aspects, and I think the first one is related to Fang Chen just said that about the NCQG. NCQG is the most important issue, I think, in the COP29, and is very well known to the whole world. So I think maybe all developing countries and many developed ones like the European Union, they are not so satisfied with the final draft. It's just $300 billion for the fund from the developed countries to developing countries, and with some limitations. So, I think this final decision is also a really interesting thing in the background of the US US election, because that Trump, he just win the election, and it's just before the final decision of the COP29. So, and we all know that there are a lot of differences, opinions of the developing and the developed countries in the number of the NCQG. So I think maybe the final decision is reached because of the fear of the Trump. I think Trump is it can be it can be seen as the you know who in Harry Potter, and maybe people say that Trump has won the election, and they will think that if nothing can be done in COP29, so nothing can be done in the future in COP30 or later. They just the willingness to increasing the fund will drop after the U.S. election. I think it is a really interesting point, and the China perspective and other countries maybe also think about this this thing. And another aspect I want to mention is that maybe the COP29 is disappointing in terms of the multilateral governance. And we know in the closing ceremony, the India's negotiator, he gave a 10-minute long speech to disagree the final decision of the NCQG. And many developing countries, they stand up and follow India to express their ideas and disappointment to the final decision. But the chair, he doesn't care so much, and decide that we only have $300 billion, and he decided. But in the real world is that India has told the chair that they don't agree the draft, and India is the second largest developing country in the world. So their voice should be heard and should be discussed, but it's not the issue, in fact. So maybe it will be some milestone for the international or global governance in climate change. And because we know that the principle is that the principle of consensus is every country should agree with the final draft, but it is not the case actually in the recent COP meetings. Yes, and I'm really worried about that, because India is a very big country, and what about China? What about other big countries? Yes, these are some thinkings and some interesting views I have heard from the discussion with some other Chinese students and negotiators.
Yeah, thank you for this insight. I see that Moritz is raising his hand. He's
According to scientist Daniel Hopman, he has the opinion that there will be no major cooperation in the near future, but at best fragmented efforts influenced by geopolitics and power dynamics. Paris, as a symbol of international climate policy aimed at achieving a global transition to climate neutrality together, is in his point of view dead, especially since Trump has been elected. At the same time, I think that the government of Biden has already done like some efforts, which should also be seen. And we at the moment only have 4 years of Trump in front of us. So I don't think that it should be called dead, but at least in danger. What do you think about this? Is the US now blocking efforts that has been done in the future, or will there be some consensus in the future?
Yeah, this is actually going directly to the Chinese
Yeah.
representation. I
Yeah.
mean, it's a good point, and I will later will give maybe my opinion regarding the EU or Germany, because just wanted to mention that then in the latest COPs, in the latest summits, Germany was always allocated some kind of leading role at the negotiations, especially last year. It was very successful, I guess, regarding negotiations. But also, of course, USA was always kind of a very powerful. But then came Trump. He retreated from the officially from the or withdrew from the Paris Agreement. Then he's doing it again. It looks like this. Now the question is also, as Moritz said, what will be the Chinese role now? What is, this is one of the main crucial questions also in this episode, I would say. What is the leading role or the leading part of China? Is this is their leading part? Will they get the steering, the steer in their hand and lead the boat to the end? Is for me one of the main issues, main questions. Just to have a number like China is the biggest producer of renewable energies by far, and also like I guess half of the electric vehicles worldwide in China, and Germany is the leader in Europe, but it's a minor player regarding the global dimensions.
Yeah, but also regarding, just to make one little point, also regarding the global emissions, China is also the leader by far with 30% after the US with 11.3% of the global total emissions. They have the responsibility, you would some assume. Okay, up to you guys.
Maybe I for my friend me first. Yes. I think it is. It is related to international relationship question, and I want to give something related to my research or what I heard from the seminars about Chinese effort in coping with climate change in recent years. I think because the Trump elected as a new president in of the U.S., the tariff or the trade war is a huge threat for China, and for China for Chinese government, I think recently that is a lot of retaliation effort to tackle with the tariffs. And another important part for Chinese government is to find more partners, trading partners, especially for European Union. And a very important part is Latin American countries, because our president Xi Jinping just went to the Brazil to attend the G20 summit. I think it's last month in November, and there is a very important progress in that in G20 G20 summit, and it is the open of the port of Chancay. It is a port near the Peru, and after this this opening of this port of Chancay in Peru, it will just overpass the traditional trading route, which is will go through the Panama Canal. So it is a huge progress to strengthen the trading relationship between China and the Latin American countries. So that is a very really important part to tackle with the US threat in the future. And for Chinese government in within the country, China is just experiencing a huge green transition now. And I think in recent months, the State of Council of Chinese government just released some new files, documents related to Chinese attitude toward the green transition or the carbon neutrality. And in 2021, In 2020, China put forward and the carbon neutrality goal and the carbon peak goal in 2060 and 2030. And in 2021, their Chinese government established a framework called the One Plus N. The one is just about to the main goals under the carbon neutrality and the carbon peak. And the N represents the specific tools and the specific strategies in different industries. So I think after 2021 till today, China has established a complete framework to mitigate and also to adapt the climate change. And we can see just the mentioned the electric vehicles and the renewable energy generation. And it is a lot of progress. And I think there is some challenges now. I think a huge challenge is about the green finance system. It's not so complete in China. And the carbon market has a long way to go because there is just one industry now. And in the future, Chinese carbon market will incorporate more industries. I think these are very important tool to we can leverage, or for Chinese government can leverage in the future to reduce the carbon emission in the future. And maybe I can complement another thing, which is about the adaptation. I think the adaptation effort in China is not so significant now, because in recent years, because China is so big, it covers a lot of area, and there are so many different natural disasters, especially in recent 3 years, and in the coastal cities and also in the inland cities, about the floods, the hurricanes and the typhoon. I think it also caused a lot of economic cost for China. So I think that's more directly related to the Bowen's research. So we can talk more about this.
Okay, I would also like to just say a few words about the traffics, because this is also something I was researching. And there's still the big question if the new Trump team, as I would call it, together with Musk as well, but also with some, as they are called, Falcons, which are like more supposed to be a bit more radical in terms of the foreign policy decisions. There's still a big question mark if the US will cooperate with the Chinese, or if the trade war will continue as it was in maybe 2019 or 20. But there might be a big role in playing involved with Musk, because Tesla sells 25% or more of their cars into China. So it's a big trading partner for the tech giant. And that's why there's still a big question if maybe they will cooperate more, open up. But at the moment, it looks like as if Trump would put on tariffs the same as for Mexico and Canada, and maybe also for Europe. So I think it's tough to really answer that question, but obviously China tries its best to find other partners, as the export of their products into the US it was getting more and more difficult, especially since the trade wars of 2017-18. I would like to just put some points on what you said, just to clarify the role of China into the climate change. So there's been really some remarkable renewable energy expansion. China invested over 280 billion in renewable energy, surpassing all other countries. And also like within the country, there's been massive tree planting campaigns as well. So you can really see some massive afforestation ecosystem restoration projects, which highlights the really ongoing efforts, since they are still responsible for, like, they still rely on 80% of fossil fuels, which is compared to US, like, a little bit more, yeah, but it's about to get lower and lower, with Europe having still 70% in fossil fuels, which maybe at the moment are looking as the most initiative. But I think that we will see further progress within the next decade also in China.
Yeah, there's also the reason that you get subsistency or like independency regarding resources, which is like kind of every nation aiming for. But I guess China's also still depends on many imports from Russia, and not only China, many other countries, because it's a huge country of obviously, and they own a lot of reserves and resources regarding coal, gas, and oil. So there are a lot of imports, and what we learned, like in the summer school in the September, about Chinese or China's philosophy, I liked it a lot. It's like two things. So the philosophy was kind of that when you promise something, you will stick to the promise, you will fulfill the promise. You're not like exaggerating with some visionary talk, and then you will never reach it. But it sounds nice. No, China is more like very plain regarding this, very straightforward. And the other thing was more like the strategy, how they want to phase down the use of coal, for example. So the strategy is actually first they're gonna electrify everything. So the electrification comes first. So they get rid of the air pollution, and then they're gonna expand more the renewable energies regarding also the energy source. Yeah, this is a different strategy. They are planning 2060, I guess, is the day or the year for carbon neutrality for China. For Europe, they're planning with 2050, Germany 2045. Let's see what is more ambitious, because China is huge. Like 2060 is also very ambitious, I guess. But they're putting so much effort into it. Like Moore said, it's really amazing. But Bowen, I didn't want to take your part because you wanted to add something.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I think the two philosophy of China you conclude is really good, and it is what China always stick to. First is that China, when we promise something, we will stick to it, and we will take action to accomplish the goal. And the second is that we first find some way and build it, and then we destroy the bad things like the fossil fuel or the coal, electricity generation. Yes, and I will add some other points. First is China's attitude to the carbon neutrality, and I think China more focus on the energy part of the climate change issue, and we think that the energy transition is the major role of the carbon neutrality, and it is most mainly on three aspects. First is that we will improve the energy efficiency of all the fuels. And the second is that we will try our best to fulfill the electrification of the end use sectors. Every end use sectors that can be electrified, we will make it to be electrified. And the third one is that we use the solar energy, the wind energy, to decarbonize the electricity generation sector. And it is the I think it's the main roadmap of the China's carbon neutrality. And I don't know whether it is the same with other countries like Germany or other Europe countries. And I'm really interested in that. And also, I think in China, most government people or most agents in the companies, they are not so familiar with the issue of climate change. They think that the carbon neutrality is a energy issue, and we do the green transition because we want to fund the new energy of our economic growth. Because after the COVID-19, we know the economy of the whole world are declining, and China is also a developing country, so we really emphasize the development and the and the economy issue. So we take the maybe the electric vehicles, the solar energy, and other energy things to be an opportunity to develop our economy. Yes, I think it's the attitude towards carbon neutrality in China, and maybe it's different from some European countries. I know many Europeans are really eco-friendly and really care about the adaptation or mitigation things. I think it can also explain why China don't emphasize too much on the adaptation, because we don't think climate change is a big issue now. Development is the biggest issue now. So I think the government don't give much get the funds or the money on adaptation, but recent years there are more and more extreme weather events happening in different provinces in China and also the whole world. So in terms of my research, the adaptation to those events are the responsibility to some maybe emergency sectors or the other public sectors in China. They built up some maybe alarming system or some other other approaches to define the disasters, but this thing is a weather disaster, not the climate change impact. Yes, and it's my
yeah, nice.
maybe I can compliment a little. Yeah, just as Bowen said, I think Chinese government pay much more attention on energy, green energy, and renewable energy, and solar, wind, and other different renewable sources. And from my research, I have a little research related to the forest management. And I think Chinese government have become more and more emphasize the forest management and learn a lot of experience from such as the European countries, because their forest management are very good. But in China, the forest quality coverage is expanding every year, but the forest quality, especially the quality to absorb the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, is not so high. It's much lower than the European trees or forest. So I think that is also a huge gap, because according to some projection of the Chinese scientists, in 2060, we have another maybe 20 billion tons carbon dioxide cannot be avoided. So we need the more and more trees and carbon sink to achieve our carbon neutrality in 2060. So I think that is also a very important pillar in the future to increase the improve our forest management and to motivate more people to just to protect and also manage the forest, because in especially in northeastern China, there are so many large area forests, but there are so few people there. So I think if we can just use more more good policy to manage them, and it can increase our carbon sink in the future, and it is also a very important part to achieve the carbon neutrality.
I have one concrete question, also from a European perspective, because in the recent years in Europe, you had also the election in Europe, and then you had the, of course, we have also re-election in Germany in February, I guess. But many elections happened this year, and what we experience is that not climate change was one of the main issues, reasons to vote for a party. It was more about migration. It was more things regarding more, let's say, populism, which was blown up in the social media, and I was wondering, because there was a lot of influence happening also in the US, but also in Europe, in many countries, leading to a some shift to a more right-winged government, and also very much further away from really tackling the climate issues and climate change. How do you see it, like, regarding China? Because is it in China very different? Because you have much more, I guess, more control on the social media. Is it easier for you to lead the way in China regarding climate change? Is there, because you said there is some, for them it's like an energy issue. Is climate change in any way also one of the top priority topics in China? I would ask this.
More like in the society.
Exactly, yeah. In the society, and yeah, maybe in the politics, yeah, because they have also tackling or trickling down.
I have a quick question. In your words, you mean that in Europe, climate change is a really hot topic in society?
It was a more important topic, but in the recent years, in the social media, it was like more important to talk about like how many migrants, how many foreigners coming, how many refugees are coming to Europe, how can we close the borders.
Economy,
the economy is a lame duck now. In Germany, I mean, they're still like one of the largest economies worldwide,
and war, of course, with Ukraine.
Exactly, so you have other topics in front, and that's why I'm thinking like it's falling behind. Climate change and the technical climate change is falling behind, and now you have also the US, which is also kind of saying, yeah, with Trump, yeah, I mean, we're gonna expand our fracking, we're gonna exploit more resources, we will close or reduce national parks whatsoever. And now I see there's the chance for China to lead the way. I like to show, okay, now the others are doing it wrong, or they have kind of like a, let's say, a downside or downside period. But how is China reacting? Or is China, it's like, it, the worst thing would be like Russia, like denying climate change and then just continuing with the exploitation. But I was wondering, like, how is the situation now in China? It's a tough question.
Okay. I want to just give you some evidence from my perspective. Yeah, I think from the society perspective, maybe many ordinary people are not so curious or interested in climate change, actually, now in China. But I think a very important engine to tackle with climate change, besides the Chinese government, is many, many firms and many, many enterprises in China. Because I am in the School of Economics and Management, and I have the I am a teaching assistant this semester as a course related to ESG or related to the managerial economics. So from my supervisor and from the professors, they told me that the MBA students now are really, really interested in ESG issue and are trying to incorporate environment, social, and governance, this kind of concepts in their management practice. So that is the first evidence. And the second evidence is from my internship. I think it's 2 years ago, but not so, that internship experience related to collaborative engagement. That is a concept related to how to make the managers of a firm to address the challenges of climate change, the environmental pollution, or the social and the governance. So this concept is put forward in 2013 by UNPRI, the principle of responsibility of investment. But in recent years, it is becoming more and more popular in China because there are more and more institutional investors just incorporated this concept in their investment decision. So that is a really important force in China now to put forward the path toward a eco-friendly or climate-friendly society. Because there in our daily life, I can feel that from the e-commerce in China and from the expansion of electrical vehicles. And also, we can see a lot of solar panels in the villages, in the household rooftops, and so many wind turbines. So I think it is a huge progress from, I think from 2020, China first put forward the carbon neutrality goal. And after 4 years till today, I think many enterprises just joined with and collaborate with Chinese government to try to implement a green transition. So I think it's really important, and it can trickle down and to influence the daily behavior of ordinary people in the future.
Mm-hmm. Bone, you wanted to add something? I don't know.
Yeah, I want to add something. My opinion is the same with Charlie, and I think that climate change has never been a hot topic for the public in China, and no matter in the past or for now, it's always not a hot issue. And I think when we talk something in the social media or in our everyday chatting with our friends, we will never talk about climate change issues. And in some politic field, I think it is not a very important topic either. Yeah. So because I learned the field of environment and climate change from my undergraduate degree, but I think that we only discuss this issue in a very small circle of people in this field, in the climate change economic field or climate change and energy system field. And I think people in China, they are more interested in other social welfare topics like the employment of the young graduates and the housing price in big cities, and also the retirement and the fertility system in China. Yes, it means that the two child or three child for each household they can have. Yes, and also many people. I think the international relationship topic has been a hot topic now because it is very intense now, and for China it's a really big problem for the future development. Yes, so I think in the future maybe climate change will also not be a very hot topic, but another thing is that the extreme events, the weather events, and the disaster event, can have very hot topic in when the event happened in some big cities. People, all the people in China will focus on that event. Yes, I think it is the It's, it, yes, I think this is the issue in China. And another, sorry, I see that you raise your hand, but the final sentence is that I think the behavior change in China, they are mostly because that the electric vehicles, they are cheap enough for the companies to employ, and also that the policy ask or require the companies or the housing to do some decarbonization issue. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also it's very interesting the way you resumed how China thinks in terms of their society. But that also is linked to the fact that of course China doesn't work like a European democracy. You don't need to have all the voices of the voters to do
Yeah.
something. So it's coming like the changes from China are coming from the top, and some people will accept and some people maybe will not. And of course there will also be debates, but the decisions can on a large scale be made very like more efficiently than in European democracies, which also leads to maybe an issue here in Europe, as there are many different voices from here, from left, from right, from center, from more economy motivated mind, and more some from more like ecologic motivated minds. Same counts for me and Laurin, as I'm more rich and Laurin is more poor. And I'm just joking. No, but we sometimes also have this debate. What is more important, economy or ecological questions? And that's maybe also an advantage in China, that it can like be made much more efficiently from the top, and going down through all those systems right into the communes. I also read about this, that this is just like in a cultural historical way always has been like that, even like for 1,000 years. It has worked as that in that way, because there are those officials that can like rapidly, if there's a rule from above, go down right into the small city. To explain it in maybe in a very simple way, but this system is very efficient in this perspective.
Yeah. Also, like yesterday, I wanted to watch a video about like the EV market, because I'm also interested. Like, two things I was looking up, especially like because of the economic system is a bit different in China, of course, as Moritz said, that of course it's a more single party system, so can be more efficient. It's like top down, but also the economy is like more planned. It's not super like the planned economy, you know, like in comparison to the liberalism capitalism system. It's more planned, so you can also be there more efficient. And it's interesting, they can also the government is subsidizing a lot regarding in the electric vehicle market. So what I was reading on, they subsidized like 29 billion coming from the government as support to the EV market in China. And of course this is then supporting technology, the science, infrastructure, and so on. But it was also because they want to reach more self-sufficiency. They want to get rid of the dependency of the crude oil imports, right? And reduce the air pollution as well. So the government, when it's really behind this decision or behind this philosophy, it can change very fast, very efficient in China. This is what I read. Yeah, I mean, I'm not Chinese, but it's like how I see it also. They're super efficient. And that's why also China is leading like the battery market. I was reading up that they, this kind of specific batteries, which are now LFP, so like the lithium iron phosphate batteries, which are most efficient right now. When you can charge in 10 minutes for 370 miles, for example, it's crazy. And the biggest producer is this CATL, CATL. And they want to expand. They have another factory that was funny in Erfurt in Germany. It's the only other one in Europe. I didn't know that it's in Erfurt and they want to expand a bit more. But the interesting thing is now you have this leverage, you have this technology, you have this, because they started already in the 90s and US didn't do it. It was more Japan and Korea as well. When you have this, this existing infrastructure, why the US, why the Europe is not using it as expanding their own electric vehicles, but now it's more switching to a completely different mindset, completely different philosophy. They are thinking, okay, no, this is a threat for our economy. We have to do protectionism, like the US, like, and now Europe is also going this way. But this also shows you that the climate change is not anymore in the center of the debate. It's more about the economy. Because they want to show their citizens, no, we protect our economy, but actually the climate change is a global issue, and the right decision, in my opinion, it's just my opinion, would be like, okay, no, we collaborate, we use this infrastructure, we use this technology. Now you have it already. We collaborate, and we want you to expand your electric vehicles in our market because we need it now, and not like in 10 years. But it's just my own opinion. I guess I'm not the only one who has this opinion because it shows you again, it's more about economy and less about the purpose.
Yes. I think I heard about a lot of economists just criticize the protectionism. I think because I attended some seminars and the professors all I think all of the professors are supporting to international trade. Although China is leading in this industry and but the market is becoming bigger and bigger, and everyone who just take part in this market will benefit from it, because the electric vehicle just a specific good, and from the consumer's perspective, you can have different preferences among different good or different vehicles. So electric vehicles just reshaped people's preferences nowadays. So people just focused or pay attention to a specific attribute about of one electric vehicles, and China just using the subsidy to boost the innovation and the technology progress from recent years, and we can just expand all of these benefits around the world and make global players in international trade benefit from it. So I think from the basic economics logic, it is really intuitive, but many politicians or many other officials, government officials, are not realizing that, because from economist perspective, international trade or economics just the glue to connect each economy, each country, each nation. So I believe in the future, if we want to find a sustainable development, or we just include every economy around the world, we need to avoid protectionism and to try our best to incorporate everyone in international trade. Yeah.
Yes, I want to add some other things, and because I think your opinion is really nice, that the climate change, it should be in the center of some debate in this field, but many politicians or many other voices they put the economy or the trade protectionism in the center of the dialogue, and to expect some progress that should be in the mitigation or the adaptation field. And I think in terms of China, China has seen some opportunities now in the field of South-South cooperation and the One Belt and Road initiative to cooperate more with some Latin America countries and African countries, and we provide many infrastructure help or the trade with those countries. And you know that US, the relationship with US is very, it is not so good now. So maybe China will find more opportunities. China's strategy is that to find more opportunities to cooperate with developing countries, because we have the same developing period now, and we can provide some experience in the field of China. Yes, and also I think another way to solve this problem is that we can start some two-side dialogue. Maybe the in the field of climate change, the dialogue between US and China is very important, because China and US, they don't have so many common profit in other aspects of the economy, but in climate change, maybe we have some similar philosophy or some similar values that we can share our new technology, or share some other aspect. Yes, I think.
Yeah, but a beautiful said. Like, I hope this can be one game changer. The common, the common profits from the collaboration in climate change, regarding climate change. But not sure if you will see it with Trump. But maybe, because we can, slowly close. I wanted to ask you maybe three sentences or three aspects you come in your mind regarding like what will you see like in the next 4 years regarding China and the US? I don't know when the next 5 year plan is coming into action or is going to be decided in China, the 5 year plan. But
Yeah, just under discussion and maybe begin from 2025 in next year.
okay, so what is your outlook, let's say?
I think I can. I hope China and the US will cooperate more even after the election of Trump. And I think because they're the two biggest economy, and we should collaborate with each other. And now, I think, especially in the education or the high, the university education level, there are so many Chinese students pursue PhD or graduate degree in the US universities, and I think this communication is really important to put forward our knowledge frontier in the future and to boost more innovation. I think not only in climate change area but in any area, it's really important to establish a platform to have more dialogue between Chinese scholars and the scholars from the US. So I think it's really important. But from the past few years, the Trump's attitude toward Chinese scholars or Chinese students are not so friendly. So I just hope in the future we have more opportunities, especially for me or Bowen or more Chinese university students. We can have more opportunity to go to the US and just exchange our opportunity opinions toward the climate change or other issue and find a consensus and to form a consensus between the US and the China. I think that's important, and especially for young students, I think it's our duty in the future.
Bowen?
I think in my opinion, in the future, China and US will still be the two largest, biggest, the largest emitters of carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas emissions. So the dialogue or the cooperation is unavoidable, no matter it is Trump or not, I think. Because we globally we should deal with the climate change issue, and US and China are the biggest economies. So if US they want to get they want they don't want to cut their emissions, I think it's hard for them to skip the trend of the whole world. And also I know that in the past China and US re relationship is not very stable either. But in the field of climate change, our Chinese climate change ambassador Xie Zhenhua and the US one, the John Kerry, they are really good friends, and they have a very close relationship with each other, even in very nervous situation in the country. Both of them, they keep the close contact and also make a lot of cooperation in the field of climate change possible. And I think in the future, it is a way for the two biggest economies to develop a good relationship like that. And also in the field of the academic, just like us, the students, the enterprise, the individual vision, the US exports, the European exports, the China's exports, and also some developing countries. We can work together to do some research or do some policy reports. Yes. And I think it is what we can do. And the political issue is very complicated, and we can not we should not always focus on that thing. We have a lot of other things that can be done. Yes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, thank you for this kind of closing words almost. Is there anything you wanted to add which I didn't talk about or didn't address? Also, Moritz, did I forget anything?
No, everything has been the most important topics have been.
We solved the problem, actually. We solved the wicked problem, climate change. Now we can go home.
Yeah, and just one more fact about the US. Trump doesn't have that much of an influence because a lot of things have already been done, and already 10% of the economy is within the green sector. Only 300,000 people are working in the fossil energy sector, as there are much more in the other sector that I just mentioned. And anyone aiming for growth must invest in the green economy, and then Trump will not totally destroy that. So I still think that we have hope, and we have good things on the horizon.
Yeah, so let's stick to this hope. I like it, because then I also want to conclude with the bridge to Mette, who is like, he left Europe, he left Germany, he went to the jungle, maybe because he doesn't have hope right now, because of he doesn't like the system, he doesn't like what is failing the people. But we have to keep the house together, let's say. We are the young ones. We have to fight for our future, and we're gonna continue for the fight. We don't lose hope. And yeah, I'm really grateful that you joined us. This was let's say a very the first of many following episodes, I hope. and also a great insight. I wish you many good prosperous years with your PhD. Yeah, see you soon. If you want to say some Chinese closing words or Chinese, like a Chinese phrase, go ahead. I like it.
Maybe the Chinese cooperate with South America, so maybe they're gonna bring back Meta.
Who knows where Meta is?
Yeah.
But I'd like a Chinese philosophical phrase in Chinese. If you have one.
Yeah, maybe we can teach you one sentence which is related to the Chinese philosophy. That is about, if you just make a promise, you will follow it, and you will make it. That is called "君子一言，驷马难追." I think Bowen knows that. Yeah, that means if you just make a promise and it is really important for you to follow it, no matter how much challenge and how much difficulty in front of you. So that is a very famous Chinese proverb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's Olaf Scholz and all the others are listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. And see you soon.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you for